Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey, friends, welcome to episode 605 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am Kevin Huntsberger, joined this week by Chad Smart. And Chad, before we get into this week's topic, which is going to be King of the Ring, past and present, and we're going to talk about some different things going on with the tournament style of wrestling, I wanted to talk about episode 605. And, you know, we both grew up in the Central Time Zone, so it was really 505 for us, but you know, for many, many years, wrestling fans, and I still, when I see the time is 6:05 on a clock, I instantly think back to WCW, or back then it was Jim Crockett Promotions, Saturday night, watching 6:05. I believe there was a time period, too, where it was on Sunday nights at 6:05. So do you have any memory specific to the JCP era? Were you watching the 6:05 shows back in the day?
Course, yeah. I mean, because like I said, that's why I got into JCP before I got into WWF. And yeah, the 6:05, you know, Andy Griffith would be going off the air, and then you come up with Saturday night. And as we kind of talked about in the recording that we did that hasn't been released yet for my series, Question Everything, which will be coming out soon. You know, there were those Saturday nights too where you tune in and they're like, oh, we're showing a Braves game tonight. And you're like, no, you're not showing a Braves game. You're showing, I want to see the Ding Dongs and the Mulkey Brothers. I don't want to see Dale Murphy.
Exactly. And, you know, that era of JCP and I can even remember, and I don't know if you were watching at that point yet or not, but the whole Black Saturday incident that for a minute, WWF was airing on TBS, which, thinking back now 40 plus years later, it still seems kind of like a fever dream, if you will. But yeah, there was just something about that wrestling and obviously the style. And when I say style, more of the formatting, I guess, because it was, like you said, the Mulkey Brothers and the Ding Dongs, it was the enhancement talent. But I think back then, those guys were like, I don't want to say the attraction, but they definitely stood out. You remembered that enhancement talent going in there with the Road Warriors or Arn Anderson or Dusty Rhodes or whatever it was. It was such a simpler time, because back then, obviously, the TV shows were the driving force to get you to go to the house shows, to the arenas, to buy tickets and put down your hard-earned money or lead up to the pay-per-view. And now it's all, you know, every match is almost a PLE or a pay-per-view caliber. I won't say quality, but caliber match, whether it's WWE or AEW. I think AEW still employs some of the enhancement matches.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I figured, all right.
Yeah, anytime you see on the lineup for AEW's weekly show, if it's, you know, it'll be like John Moxley versus Swerve Strickland, for example, but then later on be like FTR in action or so-and-so in action. And you know, if it's in action, it means it's a squash match.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, as we kind of transition into this week's topic, 1996, the summer of 96, 30 years ago now, to me is probably, you know, we grew up in the golden era and in the mid 80s. And I think, I'm not going to speak for you, but and we kind of talk a little bit about it in your episode about fandom and talking about wrestling that's going to be coming out a little bit later on the Positive Cynicism Network, is that's what hooked us. And that's, to me, what is still kind of, I go back to that nostalgic time period and think back fondly, probably with rose colored glasses. But I think that most fans resonate the most with the era that introduced them to professional wrestling. But 96, really, I think you could say is the rebirth, because in 90, 91, 92, we're kind of starting to see a decline in wrestling. And then by 93, 94, 95, mm-hmm. I think a lot of it was crap, even though we get the introduction of Monday Nitro, and really the Monday Night War starts going in 95, which helps reinvigorate the business. Mm-hmm. And in 96, we have this guy, Stone Cold Steve Austin, winning the King of the Ring tournament. We're going to talk about that, but Hall and Nash jumped to WCW, the start of the NWO. And next month in July, we'll talk more about the NWO and its impact. And 30 years mm-hmm. later, our thoughts on that. But for now, we're going to focus kind of on June of 96. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, we were both at a house show in June of 96 in St. Louis, where Austin wrestles
Duke the Dumpster Drosy.
Yeah, I was going to say it was like almost an enhancement style match. But I think this was the week before King of the Ring that we were at that yeah. show. And man, the talent, you know, you had the Ultimate Warrior and Owen Hart and Yokozuna and Vader and Steve Austin, but Shawn Michaels, Goldust. But it still felt, the WWF specifically, still felt very childish, cartoonish. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but yeah. we've talked about it before, that butterfly effect. You know, had Hall and Nash not agreed to leave for WCW, the curtain call doesn't happen. Mm. Triple H doesn't get punished, and Stone Cold Steve Austin doesn't go on to win King of the Ring. And I don't know where wrestling is today had those chain of events not happened. So yeah. let's talk about King of the Ring. You know, it was obviously a big deal in the early 90s when they, I mean, I can remember back when it was not even on pay-per-view and it was just something that they talked about, or they would just have a king, you know, Harley Race came in as the king, and then it was Haku and then Jim Duggan and Macho Man Randy Savage. And so the king thing has been around, and Jerry Lawler obviously popularized. And I remember back in the mid 80s when Lawler sued WWF and Harley Race couldn't wrestle as the king in Tennessee as part of this lawsuit. So
interesting.
Yeah, that's how serious the moniker was taken. But 30 plus years later, 40 years after, you know, Harley Race was king of the WWE, I was at a show in St. Louis where Harley Race won a King of the Ring tournament. And I think they were doing those at house shows around the country to kind of establish him as the king. That's really the first time we see the king come to play. And I'm just now sitting here doing the math. That was 40 years ago this summer that happened. So, the king has been around for a long time. What are your initial thoughts on the whole king concept and then the King of the Ring tournament concept as well?
Yeah. Well, first, going back to that house show, because that was the day before Brian Pillman was going to be on WWF programming. They had announced like they were signing him. He was going to be signed.
Yeah.
And so, the house show was a Sunday night. And I remember I went with my cousin and we had floor seats. And so, like during the intros and outros, we would run up to the barricade because we're idiots.
Yeah.
And my cousin had a bunch of old WCW magazines that had, articles on the Hollywood Blondes and whatever. And so when Austin comes out, we're like holding these magazines up. I'm like, you need to reform the Blondes. Otherwise Pillman's going to kick your ass, you know, blah, blah. And I remember Austin probably not actually listening to anything we're saying, but just his manner. Manner. He gets in the ring and he's like just staring down in our direction.
Yeah.
So like, yeah. So that's my little claim to fame to because again, that match was a week before the King of the Ring. And it was Austin versus Duke Drosy. You could hear a pin drop when Austin came out. Like,
you know, the funny thing about that show too, and I'm going to go back and look at my pictures because I wonder if we were anywhere around each other, because I went with my dad. I don't remember if that was Father's Day or it was close to Father's Day. And I, you know, that was my Father's Day gift to him, which, again, by that point, he was not into wrestling at the level
that's
I was. Especially when we were kids. But we were also on the floor and I remember Owen Hart coming out, and I had Owen Hart comes out and I'm with this group of fans that are yelling at him and stuff. And he's on the apron and he's pointing at us. And I, you know, this is back in the day with the old film cameras, but I'm going to have to go back and find those pictures and look and see if you're in any of them.
I got some here. Yeah. Cause we're on the floor. I mean, we were center of the, like, straight back from the ring, but the entranceway was off to the side.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, on the, and so the entrance was to our left.
Okay.
So I've got pictures on the railing of where they were coming out.
Yeah. I'll have to go back and look too and see. And I don't remember what row we were in. We were a few rows back. We weren't front row for sure, but it's funny. I mean, that it's hard to believe that was 30 years ago. And, you know, like I said, Austin was I don't want to say an accident, but he was definitely not, you know, as the ringmaster when he comes in, he was not getting, nobody thought on that night in June of 96 that he was going to become either 1A or 1B in the all-time box office and appeal of pro wrestling. He's my, you know, he and Flair are right up there for as my favorites of all time, but had he not won King of the Ring and had Austin Three, you know, there's again that perfect storm of it being Jake the Snake Roberts that he's against. Jake is doing the religious gimmick, so Austin 316 just becomes natural. Had he beaten Mark Merrow in the finals, there's no catchphrase that comes out of that, I don't think, right?
I agree with you. Yeah, it's the perfect storm of everything happening. And like you said, you change one thing, you change the opponent, you change the curtain call. And, you know, it's, if Austin 316 is not born 6 months later, is Austin even in WWF, you know?
Right.
Because there's the story, I think it's in Mick Foley's first book, when Mark Henry came in and the merchandising people are come over and start talking to Mark and they're like, you know, we got these ideas. And Austin's like,
the book is here. Hold on.
I thought you were going to turn to the page and start reading.
Oh, no. I wasn't that prepared.
but Austin's like, hey, what about me? And they're like, yeah, we don't see anything. You know, and Bischoff even said, a guy in black trunks isn't going to get over.
Right.
And, you know, the other interesting part about Austin 316 is, to compare it to today's wrestling, is that happens, like we are saying, June of 96. Austin doesn't win the championship until March of 98.
Right.
You know, in today's social media climate, you would have fans being like, Austin's being buried. Why won't they push Austin? Why won't they?
Right.
Because it takes that time to, and I think, you know, the other perfect thing is obviously the match then at WrestleMania 13 against Brett. And then Brett leaves and comes back. Brett comes back in 90. Brett is out in 96.
And so comes back for Survivor Series.
And faces Austin. Yeah. So if they don't do that, if I think that helped solidify, because before then, I mean, I think it's SummerSlam, Austin's facing Yokozuna on the free-for-all.
That's exactly where I was going to go next with this is, you know, you looked traditionally, rewind 3 years, 93, Bret Hart wins King of the Ring. He goes to SummerSlam and he wrestles Jerry Lawler. I think it's Doink, and then Jerry Lawler fakes an injury and then he wrestles Jerry later in the show. So he's got a high profile match. 94, it's Owen Hart wins King of the Ring and wrestles Bret Hart for the title in the cage. 95, Mabel wins King of the Ring and wrestles Diesel King of the Ring has for the championship. Yes. Yeah. And then 96 rolls around and Austin wins. And I think fans sometimes forget there's a Mandela effect that the next night people showed up at Raw with Austin 316 signs, and that wasn't the case. I mean, we're talking 2 months later, he's in the free-for-all on the TV Guide channel wrestling Yokozuna. He beats him, former champ, and by that time, though, Yoko's on the downslide. But it wasn't like this instantaneous thing, and I think you're 100% right. Had social media been around back then, the internet obviously was in its infancy, but had social media been around, the IWC would have had a field day with that, because 18 months it takes for him to really kind of fulfill that prophecy. But again, I think without the Bret Hart feud and the I Quit match at WrestleMania 13 and all of those things, because I was one of those fans, you know, I'm in my early 20s at this point and I'm clamoring for Austin to win that title. And I think it was a kind of a shift in pop culture in general too that kind of helped that with talked about it before, the Jerry Springer era and, you know, Howard Stern, and you're getting a little more raunchy on TV and in the media, and things are a little more, you know, he's flipping people off. ECW is emerging and rising up. So I think it was a whole pop culture shift that also had to happen for Austin to resonate in the NWO. And again, we're going to talk more about NWO next month as the anniversary of the official launch of the NWO gets underway. But did Austin, so if that's not the King of the Ring tournament, if that's just a pay-per-view and he beats Jake and utters, again, I don't know that he has the opportunity to even speak. So in that case, I think that the King of the Ring was necessary, but again, Austin becomes King of the Ring and for the first time in the tournament's history, doesn't put on the crown, doesn't carry the scepter, doesn't, you know, because we had King Mabel, we had the King of Hearts, Owen Hart. Austin kind of breaks that trend and then it kind of goes off the rails. I think they, and we're going to eventually get to the naming of King of the Ring here in a minute, but you know, Austin doesn't become that traditional king. Does that help or hurt the Austin character? Because I think had he carried the scepter and wore the crown, it would have almost, even though I think Macho Man, you know, Macho King is my favorite incarnation of the king, he brought a level of coolness to it. I don't know that Austin in his attitude and the way they were building him would have worked as a traditional king.
No, I agree. I think it would have been more gimmicky than anything. And, you know, especially coming after King Mabel.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'm sure Bruce Prichard has explained why that was the best decision to go with King Mabel on one of his shows.
I'm not sure. If he has, I have blocked it out. So
yeah, but yeah, and so going back to the fact that Triple H was supposed to win King of the Ring, and then it's interesting that they then had him win in '97.
Yeah.
And like, instead of moving forward, you know, like just going back to what they had planned, but so is 96 kind of the tournament, we have to have somebody. Okay. Austin go win. And then, you know, forget about it basically until the next year,
because I don't think they reference him, like we said, as king at any point after that night in June.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't remember, but I mean, they may do it in passing, just he did win, but yeah, he's not King Austin, he's not
King Stone Cold.
It's just, again, it's one of those things that I wish I had the powers of Doctor Strange to be able to go back into all the different multiverses to see what happens if Austin doesn't win King of the Ring, or if he wins against someone else.
Right. Yeah. Because who do you strap that rocket ship to? Because, you know, I was in Austin. I remember reading first about Steve Austin when he was in USWA and feuding with Chris Adams.
Yeah.
Stunning Steve. And then he comes to WCW, wins the TV title almost out of the gate. You know, he was a character that I watched, but wasn't someone that I thought he's going to be the one everyone's talking about 5 years from now, and then 30 years from now. And it's an interesting evolution. You never know. I mean, modern day equivalence, I don't want to say equivalency, but, you know, Danhausen, I knew who he was in AEW, saw some of his stuff, but never thought, even at Elimination Chamber when he, you know, debuted and came out of the coffin or the box or whatever it was that he came out of, who would have thought 3 months later he'd be the top or one of the top merch sellers in WWE? And it's just a very, you never really truly know. And with Austin, I think part of it was, what are we going to do? I don't necessarily think that Vince McMahon and company were listening to the fans per se, because I don't know that the fans were necessarily clamoring for Steve Austin to be king. Because like you said, at that house show in a week earlier, you could hear a pin drop when he came out. So there wasn't, you could see, and I think parting with Ted DiBiase helped, because Ted DiBiase left for WCW in that time period as well. So I think all of those factors kind of ultimately lead to him being that working man, that red or blue collar, you know, resonating with the everyday man.
Yeah, I think, you know, he had feuded with Savio Vega for I don't know how long prior to King of the Ring, which I don't think helped. And I think it helps. And this is, you know, another argument for wrestling fan is after the King of the Ring, when before Bret Hart came back, you know, Austin would be come out and sit on commentary and just trash talk Bret.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember, oh, you put an S in front of Hitman. That's what I think of Bret Hart.
Yeah.
You know? I don't think those were scripted lines.
Right.
I think that was Austin being Austin. And that, again, when you have something that is authentic, I think it resonates more with the fans than when you give somebody a, you know, a suffering succotash promo to go out and read.
Yeah.
And when you're trying to force a character onto them.
What do you think about, because I think there's been a lot of criticism and parallels drawn between Austin and The Rock and LA Knight, who is, you know, somebody a part of the modern day scene. And I can see the similarities and the and the hand gestures and and the things. I like LA Knight a lot. And I feel like he is also kind of in that bubble right now of the fans want to pull the trigger on him, but for whatever reason, you know, he's kind of almost becoming like that Dolph Ziggler, you know, modern day Dolph Ziggler, where we want it, but they're not giving it to us. And you know, it, we kind of talked about this before last year. Fans were bitching about, you know, we want something different. We wanted, you know, the Royal Rumble is predictable. And then Jey Uso wins and then he wins the championship. And then the fans kind of crap all over it. And I know you're not a big eater or into the Jey Uso thing. And now we see him again in the finals. And again, we're going to get to modern day here in a few minutes as well. But I know that they have ideas and formulate and go long term sometimes. It feels like sometimes it's they're flying by the seat of their pants. But you know, Danhausen is kind of upset the apple cart, I think, a little bit with all of this as well. But just imagine, you know, the fans were obviously then behind Austin and it grew and resonated. But imagine he goes to WrestleMania that year and loses to Shawn Michaels. And I know Shawn was hurt and it was time to kind of pass the torch. And that really was a reset, I think, after WrestleMania 14 was a reset for WWE in general. Brett's gone, Sean's gone, you know, so now they rely. WWE still has such a deep talent pool of even the top level talent that I've kind of, I don't want to say I've given up hope on LA Knight. I still am a fan of his. I've given up hope on WWE doing anything with him. Yeah. My confidence has faded in WWE's ability to do what I want to see them do with him. And they have a different plan, obviously. So as a fan though, I'd say LA Knight is probably, of the modern era of wrestling, is probably in my top three or four favorites of current modern day talent. But, you know, imagine that mindset back in 96 and we don't get the Austin push that we all ultimately got and wanted. You know, their hand was kind of forced because they didn't have the main event talent still there. And we've talked about that before too, as planning for the future. And we saw it in the 80s with Hogan and Warrior and Savage. And then, you know, we got Rock and Austin, but then they didn't really have that stable footing until Cena rolls around. And so, and we're kind of back into that because all of your top guys now, exception being Obafemi, are either in or pushing 40. So I don't know what point I'm trying to make here, but help me out here and throw me a lifeline, I guess.
Yeah, I felt like I like the Charlie Day meme of like trying to connect them, or Kara Sedgwick and all the numbers flying by. I think it's Kara Sedgwick. For LA Knight, you know, I liked Eli Drake, which was his TNA and NWA name. And for me, there's something because it's the same character, essentially. It's the same Eli Drake, LA Knight, cadence. Yeah. But there's just something about the WWE presentation that isn't clicking for me. And I don't know if it's just simply the delay in doing anything with him that is made me like, okay, I'm over it. Or if there's just, I don't know what it is, but I am with you that it just doesn't seem like WWE wants to pull the trigger on it. And I don't know if it's age related, although, as you said, most of their stars are over 40.
Yeah.
If it's something behind the scenes that someone, you know, or if it's just that they have like, oh no, we're going with Gunther, we're going with Jay, we're possibly going with Obafem, you know, he just kind of got lost in the shuffle of this thing where, you know, and I think it goes back to, as we've talked about growing up, you know, that golden era, you had 4 years of Hulk Hogan,
right?
You know, a year of Savage, you had, and then it wasn't until Austin came around and The Rock, and then you had like, you know, 30-day title reigns or 24-hour right. title reign, you know, and seemingly every top guy got to be champion at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, but I mean, even I'm trying to think, has LA Knight even been like US champ or
he was, champ? Yeah, he beat US, Logan okay. Paul at, I think, SummerSlam. Okay. And then he lost it to Jacob Fatu at WrestleMania.
Okay.
So he was US champ. And you know, LA Knight, whether he ever wins the title or not, I mean, he has made a name for himself. And I think yeah. that eventually one day, you know, down the road, he'll be in the Hall of Fame and all that good stuff. But I didn't, you know, because I wasn't watching the NWA. I knew who Eli Drake was. But I never, until I saw his interview with Chris Van Vliet, I never knew that there was the Eli Drake at the same cadence of LA. Mm. And he kind of goes into some of that stuff as well. And I feel like, because he was in TNA for a bit too, wasn't he? As mm. Eli Drake.
And before that, he was in the developmental for WWE, because I have the Triple H workout DVD.
Yes.
And he's one of the guys working out with, and he gets a yeah at some point in the.
Well, and he, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't his original WWE gimmick Max DePriest or something? And he was Max.
I mean, he was LA Knight in NXT.
Okay.
And then when they brought him up to the main roster, then he was Max DePriest for like 2 weeks. And then, I think,
but wasn't he Maxine Dupree's brother or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. It was a yeah.
yeah.
But that's part of it too, I think, is developing those, you know, because he does have, I mean, obviously the crowd is responding to the guy and enjoying, but again, not everybody gets, you know, society itself has become so accustomed to everybody gets a trophy that as fans, I think some of us are in that mindset of, well, everybody deserves a title shot or everybody deserves a spot at WrestleMania or on this PLE or on Raw or on SmackDown or whatever the case is. And that's not reality. And so I think sometimes when our favorites don't get that spotlight, you know, we turn into this, you know, well, WWE is doing them wrong. And as we evolve into, you know, the King of the Ring itself, you had mentioned, and I don't know if it's more of the modern, I think you were specific to this tournament. So before we get to the specific of this year's tournament, has the King of the Ring concept, because last year we talked about Money in the Bank, so let's talk this year about King of the Ring, because okay. over the last couple of years, the winner of King of the Ring has gone on to face the champion of their choosing at SummerSlam, and Queen of the Ring for that matter as well. So we talked earlier about, you know, 93, 94, 95, 96, mm-hmm. you know, he's in the opener. It was never an official stip. It just kind of happened that way in 94 and in 95 that the King of the Ring winners go on to face the champion. Is it a worn out trope? Do we need something different? The tournament concept, you know, 88 at WrestleMania, Savage in a one night tournament. 98, The Rock, you were there for that, in a one-night tournament wins. Mm-hmm. To me, those are memorable and exciting and fun tournaments. The original King of the Ring in 93, it was a one-night tournament. Now you have qualifiers and all this stuff, and then it comes to a head, you know, weeks later. And AEW is kind of the same way, the whole tournament concept. But let's, for the sake of argument, stick to King of the Ring. Does it need a new name, a new look? Do they honor, you know, we have the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. So do you honor someone who has passed away or is no longer wrestling with how AEW has done the Owen Cup? Does it need a fresh coat of paint? Or does it just need to go away? What are your thoughts on the whole? Or does it stay the same?
Yeah, well, first of all, I was very disappointed today when I was pulling out what shirt I was going to wear for this episode, because I have a King Owen Hart shirt. Mm. I cannot find it. So This was the closest I could come to a
back up because I can't see it.
It's Copeland. It's rated R.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's Edge. But I'm not a fan of the way they do the King of the Ring now. I would prefer a one night tournament because I think that's more impressive.
Yes.
If you go through. And I know that would require them to have maybe more than three matches on a PLE. But I'm not a fan of the winner gets a title shot at SummerSlam. You know, if you want to give them a title shot on Raw, SmackDown, or a lesser B-grade pay-per-view, PLE, sure. But I think with the stipulation of the Royal Rumble winner gets the title shot or the Elimination Chamber gets the title shot at Mania, like, I just feel like there needs to be a better way to determine your title, your contenders, because I also think that makes the outcomes a little bit more predictable. Although, I mean, this year's King of the Ring could go one of two ways. There's the one way that I think it should go, and then the other way that, unfortunately, I think it will go. Mm-hmm. We'll get to in a minute. But I do think having it in one night, you know, I know WrestleMania 4 gets kind of slagged on for the tournament matches not being that exciting, but one, it was a different time frame,
right? Yeah,
you know, of wrestling. Whereas I think you could do more creative stuff or exciting tournaments this year or in today's wrestling landscape. But I also think, I just think it means more when you can get through three guys in one night.
Yeah,
that's what she said.
That's what she said. Well, you know, and again, both companies are doing it where they have the tournaments and it sets up for the champ. You know, to me, it is kind of, and I'm not going to say lazy booking, but it does seem like it's, I guess it helps in the case if you, like, to me, Will Ospreay is a natural contender for the title. He doesn't or shouldn't have to win a tournament to face the champion, in this case, MJF at Wembley. Mm-hmm. Obafemi, the way they've treated him, you know, he doesn't, because right now, and I went back and looked at the past King of the Ring winners, and like, it's Cody Rhodes won it last year, the year before last, last year, I guess, to face John Cena. Your former champions are in these, you know, to me, King of the Ring or the Owen Cup should be used to elevate that talent, the LA Knights of the world that are like knocking at the door, and to you know, kind of how it was back when Austin won it, when Owen Hart won it, they went on to bigger and better things. But you've got all these top contenders who could, you know, theoretically, you know, I'm the former champion, I deserve a title match, versus I'm an up-and-comer. So in that regard, I agree with you on the winner of tournaments shouldn't necessarily, you know, the title is I'm this champion now, or I'm this, I'm the Owen Cup champion, or I'm the, not champion, but you know what I'm saying, or I'm the King of the Ring, or whatever they change the name to. So I'm with you on that regard as well. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on this year's King of the Ring? I know you said you had some thoughts of King, and maybe you're going to throw in Queen as well. We don't want to leave the lady.
Yeah. So first question, because this is kind of confusing me, and I don't know if you'll know off the top of your head. Mm-hmm. Do the winners get to choose who they face, or?
I believe the winners get to choose. I remember last year they had talked about, you know, the winner gets, and I'll be honest, you know, we were in Montana, we were on vacation. Mm-hmm. Last week they were overseas, being WWE, and so the shows came on earlier in the day, and when I came home I just didn't make the effort to watch. So I haven't watched Raw in probably 3 weeks, and SmackDown, mm-hmm. I don't have cable. I haven't kept up with the weekly shows, again, all coming through social media, but it's my understanding that the winner gets to choose, but I don't know if, you know, like Obafemi is a Raw guy. Yeah. But I think Jey Uso was also a Raw guy. So do they automatically get the Raw champion, which is Roman Reigns?
Yeah, I don't know, because that's the thing with, sure. with Liv Morgan being in the finals, and she's the women's champion, the Raw champion. And they're not talking about, like, oh, if she wins, then she's going to face whoever the champion is on, Rhea Ripley. You know, it's like, oh, she's the champion, and then she's just going to not have to.
I wish they would clarify that more, but I also wish that the, because I did respond to somebody on social media the other night, and I don't typically do this, but people are bitching about Liv Morgan being in the tournament. And I'm like, okay, 6 years ago, Brock Lesnar was the champion and was in the Royal Rumble, insisted on being number one, and tore through everybody. It wasn't impossible to think that he could have won that night. And we've talked about that, kind of having that champion in the mix as well. And then what are we going to do with this? Make it a scenario. And I'll be curious to see, what they do. But I don't think they've done a good job of it. You know, with Brock being in Rumble, I felt like they did a better job of laying that out than they have. Because people are like, oh, this is a mistake. You know, they've got – but I think there's a plan there. They just haven't executed it in terms of explaining it.
Yeah, and then from what I've seen too is because it's Io Sky versus Liv. Uh-huh. Like you said, they're both on Raw. And so I've seen, like, if Io wins, then they just do the match again at SummerSlam for the title. And I'm like, either way, the way it's being presented, that match doesn't seem interesting.
Right.
Because if you're just going to give me a rematch the next month.
Yes.
Wow, then why am I getting excited about this match? I'm gonna see it. And if Liv wins, I think there's a story that can be told there.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see how they go. Now, obviously what I'm about to say is not going to happen based on this, the way things are going this year. But my question for you that I was going to ask last week, and I wanted to wait until we saw how match played out. And again, this could be nothing if you have to stick to your brand's champion if you win. But what is the name of Cody Rhodes' theme song?
Oh,
I'm putting you on the spot.
I know, and I'm trying. I can see it, but I can't. I don't remember what it is.
It's called Kingdom.
Kingdom.
Yeah, split that into two words.
Kingdom. Oh, I love it.
What's the Spanish word for king?
Rey.
So we could have Rey Dom Mysterio. And that's something, I mean, obviously, hopefully Dom will be around for many years that they can do. And maybe you set that up after when Rey Mysterio wants to retire. Yeah. And then you can have the battle of the Reys to see who the real Rey Mysterio is. But I'm like, it is right there for you.
Yeah.
How are you not?
Right. Well, you know, and not to say that WWE doesn't know what they're doing, but I would venture to bet if you polled an audience of fans, 90%+ of them would think that Rey Mysterio's name is Rey.
Is Rey
Mysterio. Yeah. And that it's not King Mysterio, which many years I kind of fell into that same boat, you know. So yeah, that's interesting. I didn't even think of it that way. And I actually thought they were going to go with Dom.
I thought he would at least be
Luke win over Oba.
Yeah. And that's where, so right now we have Oba versus Jay, which will come up and be the final. I'm totally expecting Brock Lesnar to get involved.
Yeah.
And because if they're going to do Lesnar versus Oba at SummerSlam, I like the idea that I saw someone, I'm going to guess sarcastically made, is that Gunther wins the title from Cody, Jay wins the King of the Ring, and then you run back, run it back.
God.
That awesome WrestleMania 41 match.
That is a real scenario. Real possibility.
But if Jay has to go battle the Raw champion, then you have Jay versus Roman, and then we get more bloodline drama. So,
because that's not a SummerSlam rematch from a few years ago too. we got Jay and
Roman. Yeah, and it's also, can we kill the bloodline? Because this has gone on longer than the NWO. This has gone on longer than, I can't think of anything else that's really bad. That's gone on really long. But yeah, I did, the fact that Jey Uso was in that final, again, I'm sure WWE has a story they're trying to tell. I just, it's not for me.
Well, they keep pairing, you know, it's kind of the fail safe, you know, because we've talked about tag team wrestling before. And obviously the Usos, one of the most prolific, I think they are the record holders for the longest reign. They kind of have gone back and forth with them as a team this year, even, you know, reuniting them. And now, you know, now Jay is in the finals of a singles tournament to face the singles champion. And what other tag teams besides this, you know, again, I haven't watched in the last few weeks, so I don't even know. I know Logan Paul is hurt. And I think they've done the Freebird rule with the belts. I think it's still in the Vision faction, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Man, that's interesting. And I think you're right. Again, it's kind of like Obafemi doesn't need it. It would definitely be a twist because I think everybody is kind of in the same boat that you're in, is predicting that it's going to be Oba and Brock at SummerSlam if Brock is, in fact, really retiring. And that's, again, that's all speculation just based on what John Cena said in an interview last year that Brock was going to retire in Minnesota, and everybody has jumped to that conclusion. I don't think he ever officially said he's retiring at SummerSlam or anything like that, but.
Well, he retired at WrestleMania.
Well, yeah. I
mean, why is he back? But yeah. And then I've seen speculation, you know, that Oba wins and faces Lesnar on night one and then challenges for the championship on night two.
That's right. SummerSlam is two nights this year, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
Jeez. Yep. That's a whole nother topic, I guess. But so in general, though, is King of the Ring the name, the tournament? I don't think they would ever change the tournament, but does it need a refreshing? You know, we just read earlier this week, the founder of the King of the Ring concept, I guess, recently passed away. He was in his 90s. And no disrespect, I don't remember his name or what his role was in WWE. But like I said, those tournaments have been around since we were kids. And they took a hiatus for a while and came back. And does it need rebranding? Does it need something different? Or do they just keep kind of going par the course and you can make little crowns and sell merchandise in that regard?
Yeah, I would say probably something like Austin's win is better, where it's just a one-night thing.
Yeah.
You get the accolade of being King of the Ring, but unless you have a character like Macho King, like King Booker, like King Woods, that can really play into the gimmick, I don't think we need a king running around each
week. And does the gimmick have to be a heel? I mean, I remember, you know, in the early days, Lawler was a heel and then he became a face, and
he became a heel.
But if you look at his time in Memphis, I mean, it was primarily as a face and as the king. And then over the years with WWE, it seemed like the King of the Ring, with the exception of Bret Hart winning that first year, but then Hacksaw Duggan was King Duggan. But besides that, there are long stretches where it is a heel king. And I think that arrogance, you know, Regal and Booker T, like you said, and Macho King, those guys are all, to me, more memorable kings than, say, you know, Cody Rhodes winning it last year. I mean, had I not seen a graphic before we recorded this podcast, I would not have been able to tell you who won last year's King of the Ring. So I feel like it's almost one of those tropes that has run its course, and I wouldn't be opposed to it being, you know, I don't want to say the Bret Hart Cup because it's a ripoff of the Owen Cup, but something along those lines where it honors either a previous king, the Macho King, or the Jerry Lawler Cup, or whatever you want to call it. I don't know. I don't necessarily say change for the sake of change, but I also think that the whole King of the Ring concept has become a shell of its former self, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't put all these top contenders in it, but that's just
me. And I think it's also because of the way television is now, where we have, you know, the big matches every week, mm-hmm. and you have the pay-per-view every month. It's, again, unless you have a really good story to tell with the tournament, it's just, it comes across as just another week, another show.
Yeah. So. Yeah. There's no specialness. Well, friends, we want to hear your thoughts on King of the Ring as a concept and this year's tournament. And of course, let's go back 30 years. Do you remember Austin 316's birth and whatnot? And we're going to be talking again about the NWO in the next couple of weeks as well as we get into July. So, Chad, I want you to do a little homework and think about, because the NWO never technically got closure. You know, you're talking about the bloodline earlier and ending it. So think about how we would have put a bow on the NWO if we had the opportunity to do that. It started off obviously red hot and changed the business, but it kind of dwindled and faded away. So think about that. Anything else you want to add before we tie up this week's episode?
I don't know if you caught the SmackDown segments on social media, but are we going to see the return of Zack Ryder? Thanks to Danhausen. And if so, I will laugh my ass off if that happens.
Woo, woo, woo. You know it. that's going to be interesting too. We'll have to wait and see, as they say. But friends, thanks for listening and or watching to this week's episode. Have a great week, and we will see you next time.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.